We'll speak of our theme for today. We are looking at the life of Moses, and we're kind of trying to pull out of his life principles for how God developed him into the leader of all of Israel, one of the most important leaders in all of Israel's history, and the leader who would save them from captivity in Egypt and usher them through the wilderness in the time of trial to the promised land, to overtake the promised land. And so this amazing charismatic figure, how did he become who he became? There was many years before he was called as the leader of Israel, and there was much development that was done there. And as I looked at Moses' life and looked for a theme of his leadership, I came upon this theme of the idea that his faithfulness to God's will, despite sometimes being hesitant to be faithful, always led to fruitfulness in his leadership. So if we want to be the kind of leaders Moses is, and last week I challenged you all to say that if you are a Christian, I believe you are called to be a leader in this world because you are a light shining in the darkness. You are a city on a hill. You are a light on a lampstand. So you are by nature as a Christian a leader. And if we want to be the kind of leader that Moses is and have a fruitful impact for God's kingdom, then we must learn to be people of faithfulness, people who seek first God's will and desire after what God desires after before our own will. And so this is the theme of the entire series, is to be faithful, to be fruitful, we must be faithful. We must lead in God's faithfulness or we won't be fruitful for God. So we looked last week at the situation that was in Egypt before Moses was born, the situation that led to the need for Moses' leadership. And we saw that after Joseph had left his people the people of Israel in Egypt to save them from a famine, they grew and they grew and they grew, and God blessed them, and they had many, many children. And eventually, they had outnumbered, or they had grown so large, they became a real threat to the Egyptian people. And so Pharaoh looked around and he saw these people, and it had been 400 years since Joseph, so he had somehow forgotten throughout the teaching and the generations passed on through to him that Joseph had saved all of Egypt, and he forgot the debt that Egypt owed to Israel, and he decided that he was going to treat the nation of Israel, he's going to treat the Israelite people, the Hebrew people, with disdain, and he was going to treat them poorly. He was going to enslave them and force them into hard labor so that they would be beaten down and tired, so that if there was ever any threat from them, the Egyptians could overcome them easily. And so they forced them into slavery. But it wasn't enough. The Israelite people grew and continued to be blessed by God. And so Pharaoh gave a decree that was a genocidal decree meant to wipe out the Hebrew people off of the face of the planet. And that decree was to kill all males born to a Hebrew woman. The women can live because if all the males were dead, right, what would be left for all the Hebrew women? They would have to marry Egyptian men, and then they would be blended into Egyptian culture and genetics, and they would begin to cease to exist. So this was Pharaoh's plan. But we saw in the first step of becoming faithful, that in faithfulness we have to overcome fear, that the midwives of the Hebrew people overcame Pharaoh's fear of the Israelite people by disobeying Pharaoh's command, right? They decided they were not going to kill the Hebrew boys. And they came up with an excuse when they were called before Pharaoh and they were told that you are not doing what I've told you to do. What was it that they said? Do you guys remember? Yeah, that the Hebrew women are strong and they give birth faster than Egyptian women. So before we can even get there, the baby's already born. So we can't kill them as they are coming out. So Pharaoh changes his strategy. He changes his plan. And he decides that all boys born to a Hebrew woman, whether they are born or unborn, that they are to be thrown into the river. They are to be cast into the river and killed. So he ups his plan to make sure that he can still commit the genocide he's desiring to make. And in the midst of this, we come to our story this week in Moses' birth, and we see a new theme emerge about leadership in the form of faithfulness to God, and that is that faithfulness must overcome opposition. Faithfulness must overcome opposition. So last week, what was it? Faithfulness must overcome fear. This week, faithfulness must overcome opposition. There is great opposition in the time. Now, we looked last week briefly at the person of Pharaoh, and we realized that this man was the most powerful man on earth at the time. His nation, his kingdom was the biggest within the whole region, and he had the greatest army, he had the most technological army, he had special chariots that could ride faster than anybody else, and it's how he conquered the land. And we have remnants of the power of those pharaohs, and what are they? Did somebody say the pyramids? Well done. The pyramids, right? These are how powerful these men were, that they forced others to build giant monuments to their power so that in death they might be ushered into the afterlife as gods and the way that their religion said. And so they built these huge monuments, the pyramids. Thousands of people go to see the pyramids every single year. Why? Because they're still a mystery to us. There are theories about how they were built, but knowing the technology of the time, most scholars are baffled by how they accomplished the task that they accomplished in building. This is how powerful the man Pharaoh was. And yet, last week we saw the bravery of these two midwives to oppose Pharaoh's rule and his unjust decree to kill all the Hebrew boys. And we saw that they overcame the fear because they decided to be faithful to God over the fear that could have run through them easily. This week, there's a close tie to this because we see as Pharaoh ups his ante and gives a new command that all the boys are to be thrown into the river, we see a new set of women appear on the scene, all of whom just as bravely oppose the rule of Pharaoh and choose faithfulness to the rule of God and to God's will. So we're going to look at these three women, and we're going to see a little bit about what they did. The first is Moses' mom. That picture is kind of dim there. Our projectors are getting a little old, and we need to replace them sometime soon. So sorry that picture doesn't show up as good, but that is Moses and Moses' mom, Jochebed, and Moses' sister, Miriam. And if you could see it faintly there, they're pushing Moses out in this basket. Now notice the bravery of Moses' mom, right? In the opposition that she's facing from the most powerful man on the entire planet, as far as she knows, he has said that he wants all Hebrew boys killed and thrown into the river. And yet when she gives birth to her baby boy, she says, this is a fine boy, which is kind of a weird thing to say, right? And she says, I'm going to keep him. So she keeps him secret in her house for the first 3 months of his life. Can you imagine that? Mothers, how many of you have been mothers in here in some way or another? Can you imagine keeping your 1 to 3 month old secret from all people, even in the modern day where we live in houses far away from each other and kind of, you know, walls between us and insulation and stuff? Could you imagine keeping that baby secret from everybody for 3 months? How terrible would that be, right? On your psyche, how hard would that be as every time he cries, you're trying to shush him and no, we're gonna be killed if you cry anymore. It's a little bit higher stakes than when we're up at night rocking our babies to sleep, right? And yet she chooses to oppose the will of Pharaoh and follow after God and be faithful to God by keeping her son alive. And after 3 months, she realizes there's no way I can keep this little boy secret anymore. At some point, somebody's going to hear him, somebody's going to come, and somebody's going to tell on me, and I'm going to be in trouble with Pharaoh, right? And so she comes up with an ingenious plan. Now notice the irony of her plan. What was Pharaoh's decree? All boys are to be cast into the river. So she follows the letter of the law, and she casts Moses into the river. But she builds for him a little makeshift boat, right? Gets a papyrus basket, and she covers it with waterproof material, and she floats him into the river gently, giving him every chance possible to live. And I half wonder, as I read this passage, if she knew the day and the time that the princess of Egypt would come down to the river and bathe, and the exact location. And she decided to do the plan on the day she decided to do it on, and she decided to do it at the location and the time because she knew that Moses would be close to this royal family and that maybe, maybe this princess might take pity on him. And obviously the princess did, and we'll talk about her in a second, but just the fact that she did should show us that the people of Israel probably knew her to be a kind and generous and merciful person, right? And so it would make sense that her plan would involve maybe somehow ushering her baby into the arms of this royal princess so that he might be able to live instead of die. And so she bravely opposes Pharaoh. Now, this is real, real bravery, because if she is caught in this, if anything goes wrong in her plan, what's going to happen to her and her family? Not only will the baby be put to death, but she'll probably be put to death, and her family will probably be punished for generations to come for their disobedience as an example of what happens when you oppose the will of Pharaoh, right? And so this is what the kind of stakes that she has as she's coming and bravely choosing to oppose Pharaoh's will and to choose to be faithful to God, to overcome the opposition to God's will in choosing to be faithful. So the second woman that we see in this story is the Egyptian princess. What brave moment we see when this woman goes down and she hears a little cooing or something or crying, and she sees, now she's not brave enough to go into the water herself. What does she do? Like every rich person, she sends her servant to go do it for her, right? You know, hey, maid, there's something over there. Go wade into that crocodile-infested reeds and grab that baby for me. And so the maid comes and grabs the baby. She sees the baby, and she's overcome with pity for this baby. And she knows immediately who this baby is, right? Because she says, this must be one of the Hebrews' boys. And she knows the decree of her father that all of the boys of the Hebrew people must be cast into the river and killed. She knows that her father wants this baby dead. And yet, what does she choose to do? She chooses to adopt him as her own son. What kind of conversation do you think that was? Hey, Dad, guess what I found at the river today? Can I keep him? Probably a little bit more scary than that, right? Hey, Dad, remember those people that you're trying to wipe off the face of the planet by killing all of their sons? Hey, I found one of their sons, and I kind of want to keep him. Can I keep him? And somehow she got permission, or she snuck it, or she hid it, or she lied, and she herself opposed the will of her father by keeping this baby boy alive, right? We don't even know if she's a believer in the God of Israel. We don't know what her position is, but in her actions, she is being more faithful to the will of God than she is the will of Pharaoh, right? And she is honored for this position within the people of Israel, being remembered by the people of Israel as the woman who raised Moses. Now, there's a third woman in this story. Let's go to that next slide. Did you guys able to get that up? Or no? Got it? There you go. In a lot of the pictures we see of this scene, there is a particular smaller figure in these depictions. And who is it? It's Miriam, Moses' sister, right? And we're told in the text that she curiously follows along. I wonder if Moses' mom didn't tell her, hey, follow the basket and make sure that she makes it over there to the princess. And then pretend like you're just walking along cleaning clothes or something and just tell the princess, hey, I could find a woman to nurse this baby if you want. But imagine the bravery of this young girl, right? She's facing the opposition of an entire powerful nation. And for all she knows, this princess is going to turn on her and her mother's plan and is going to have her and her mother executed for trying to oppose the will of Pharaoh. And yet she bravely follows after this basket and she watches what happens. And then at the right moment, she just pops out of nowhere and she tells the princess that she can go and find a Hebrew woman to nurse this baby. And she, of course, brings back her brother to her mother and reunites their family for him to be raised until he's a little older with among the Hebrew people. And then he goes back to be with his people. What an amazing story in Moses' birth. I mean, just the drama of this, the magnificent work of God behind the scenes. God's not really mentioned in this passage at all, and yet the reason why the story is being told is because God has orchestrated it the entire way. Even if it was both Jochebed and Miriam's plan, it was God who made a faithfulness in their heart to choose to oppose Pharaoh, to have the courage and bravery to oppose his will, and to choose to serve God's will instead. It was God who worked in the heart of the princess to be a merciful woman, to be one of pity, that when she saw this boy, she could not follow through with her father's unjust command, and she had to save this boy. It was God who worked in this plan, and we see at the end of chapter 2 the reason why. At the end of chapter 2, we're given a line, and the line is that God had heard the cries of his people, and he responded. God had heard the cries of his people, and he responded. So what are the principles for us that I see in leadership? And for us as Christians, how are we supposed to live in the world? Well, the first thing that I think I can tell you confidently is that you will face opposition if you choose to seriously follow God's will. I can guarantee this for you because every single time I have gotten serious and said, you know what? I am going to seek after Christ's will. I am going to spend my time in prayer and devotion. And I am going to try and follow God as closely as I can. That's when all the garbage that can possibly pile up in my life chooses to pile up in those moments, right? The person who discourages you and begins to say things to you or about you that tears you down, right? A windstorm comes and rips a copper plating off of your roof. And you have tons of money that you have to put out for the... A piece of your roof falls down during worship, and you have tons of money that you have to... A flood happens where water comes up through your drains, and then you have tons of money that... I see a theme. I see a theme in our own church, right? That God has been faithful to us, and you all have been faithful to God. Yet, have we faced opposition in just my time here? Yes. And one of the things I see in the history of our church, if you look back at First Presbyterian Church of Dearborn, and you read that longer history that is on our website, I dare you to not see the theme that this congregation has continued to face opposition after opposition after opposition for its existence, and yet the people of this congregation have chosen to remain faithful and to serve God the best they can, even through those tough times, and God has always blessed us on the other end of it. There was times where the military foundry in this town moved away and people moved and fled out of Dearborn to where there was only a few families left worshiping in this congregation, and they had just built a building and they couldn't afford it anymore, and they weren't paying pastors, and pastors were going away mad having not been paid for months at a time. And yet they persisted in faithfulness the best they could, and we're sitting in this building today. What an amazing testimony to this congregation's history of faithfulness to God in the face of opposition. I guarantee you that if you get serious this morning to follow after God's will, and you leave here with a passion and a fire to begin to spend daily time with God and to begin to discern what his will is for you, that you will face some kind of opposition to that effort. You will face discouragement. You will face financial troubles. You will face opposition from friends at your work, or you will face some kind of persecution, or you will face some kind of inner spiritual warfare, temptation, and distractions that want to lead you away from what you are trying to accomplish. I guarantee it will happen. I'm not selling it well, am I? That's because the second key is that you will need to be persistent. You will need to go into this endeavor with an idea that you are going to persist through the opposition. And then no matter what happens, you will persist. How many of you have ever sought to lose weight at some point or another in your life? Does opposition come up to your effort to lose weight? Yeah, it's called Buddy's Pizza and Brome Burger and Yeah, every time I drive down Michigan Avenue, it's an opposition to me losing weight. Just this morning, somebody in this congregation offered me a chocolate-covered macadamia nut. And I had to say, get away from me, Satan. I didn't say that because he's a nice man, Bert. Thank you for offering me. But opposition comes up, right? And in order for us to stay with the plan, in order for us to lose weight, we must persist through the opposition, right? We must persist through the temptation and stay faithful to the plan. If you are going to follow after God's will, opposition will come, and you must have the mindset entering into it that you will persist through the opposition, no matter what it is, no matter how difficult it is. It has to be a part of your mindset, or you will fail and fall quickly to whatever that opposition is. You have to learn to have the same spirit that Jochebed had, that Miriam had, that this princess had, that despite the overwhelming opposition that they had and the most powerful man on earth giving a command, they decided to remain faithful to God's will over human will. The last thing I can assure you is that God will see and hear you, and he will honor your attempts to be faithful to him. He will absolutely honor your desire to do his will. He will bless you. He will open his heart to you. He will begin to teach you how to face the opposition. He will give you the courage and the persistence to overcome any of the opposition. God will hear you. We know this because God has continually heard his people throughout all of time. This story where we hear God hearing his people in Egypt is the first time we see God do this. And yet we know from the rest of the story of Israel that they continue to fall away from him. They get oppressed by a nation. They cry out to God. And what does God do? He hears their cries and he rescues them. The story of Yahweh, the God of Israel, and his people over and over throughout the entire Old Testament is God being the rescuer of his people. And we know, ultimately, that he rescued not just his people, the Jews, but he rescued all people by sending his son, Jesus Christ. And so it's at this table this morning that we recognize God's ultimate rescue of all of us as he heard the cries of the earth under the oppression, the opposition, the injustice of sin and death, and he decided to do away with it permanently forever by sending Jesus to come and to rescue us from that death, that sin, that oppression. And so at this meal that we celebrate this morning, we remember that God hears us and answers our cries. And that promise helps us to endure the opposition that will come against us in seeking to do his will, and to be persistent to fight through that opposition, to be faithful to him in this generation and in the generations to come. So this is how we come to this table this morning, remembering that God is for us and that he has invited us to dine with him in his kingdom around this table.